Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I am Carlos Collazo and joined by Jacob Rudner. Hello, Jacob. Welcome to the Draft Podcast. I got to pinch hit for you on the College Podcast earlier this week. If you guys are just regular listeners to everything that comes on the BA feed, you heard that conversation. But I'm very excited to have Jacob Rudner here to talk a little draft. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm excited that we are conversing more in the podcast space. I think that this is a mutually beneficial thing. So I'm pumped to do this with you and happy to be on the Draft Pod.
Yeah, excited as well. It's always fun chatting with you, Jacob. It'll be more fun to kind of get some more cohesion between us this year as we just cover the college baseball landscape and the draft landscape. Today, we've got a fun podcast in the works. This is one of my favorite podcasts that we've done in the past. I'm very excited to see kind of how your strategy maybe compares or contrasts to what Peter did for us in the past and just navigating the board. We are both trying to build the best hitters and pitchers we can by drafting tools in the college class. That is the assignment today. So both Jacob and myself are going to draft a hitter that has the following tools: hit, power, run, field, and arm, the main five tools that we typically grade out for position players and hitters. And then for our pitchers, the five tools we're going to be targeting are fastball, slider, curveball, changeup, control. And how this works is we both go back and forth drafting specific tools from players to fill out those two players in whatever order we want. If Jacob really wanted to go heavy on hitters and avoid pitching entirely because he was either confident in some sleepers in the pitching category, or he just felt that that category was more loaded and he had a lot of good options, he could do that. If he wanted to go back and forth for some more balance, he could do that. If he had some priority players that he felt like had a number of tools in multiple categories, he could do that as well. So that's kind of the assignment. Once we choose one specific player, that player is not eligible for any other category. Is there anything else I did not outline, Jacob, to make clear to the listeners there?
No, I think that covers it. We're looking to build a superhuman player. I think the one thing is the righty lefty stuff on the mound. We can pick right-handed and left-handed pitchers. This is not we're not exclusively pigeonholed into right-handed tools if we go with a right-handed pitcher to start. So maybe that's important. But other than that, you touched on everything.
Yeah, it is a Frankenstein-y hodgepodge sort of just selecting the best attributes, and you get them on your new player no matter mechanics, deliveries, arms. The interesting thing too is always like we would get into the weeds about like different positions. If you have a fielder that plays X position and you take a throwing arm that's Y position, like does that bug you? Sometimes it does, but it's really wide open. However you want to attack it, you can. We did flip a coin digitally prior to this and I wound up with the first pick.
Allegedly.
I'm not sure if Jacob trusts that entirely. But I am happy to get it because there are a few players that I was, so I guess we'll just get into this in earnest unless you have something else you want to mention off the top here, Jacob.
You're good to go.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I was very happy to get the first overall pick because I feel like there are a couple players that just make sense that you would want to target initially just given the tools. And this is maybe unsurprising, maybe boring, but I feel like I have to do it. Although maybe for the specific tool, this will surprise you, but I'm going to take Rock Chalowski's fielding ability. I feel like the separation between him and the next best defender in this class on the college side is pretty significant. And I also think I'm taking Chalowski off the board for at least three additional tools on top of field. The only tool that I didn't really have Chalowski written down for and consideration for was running. I think there are other runners that are just a little bit quicker, more dynamic there. But I think he'd be an interesting pick for arm, for hit, for power. So I think I've just gotten the best defensive shortstop in the class. And I also think I've just kind of eliminated a few decent options for you to other categories. So that's my 1-1 pick, Rock Chalowski as my fielding tool.
I think that makes a lot of sense. What's funny, as I was getting ready for this podcast, I was thinking about, is the best way to approach this to take guys who maybe don't fit into the obvious category that you would put them in? So like my first pick here, and I'll get into it in a second, it does the exact same thing. And we didn't even discuss this before we went and we did it. But yeah. I'm taking Cameron Flukie for control. I think that Cameron Flukie is somebody who has budding control. We saw it last year when he walked, I think it was just over 20 batters in 100 innings. And You know, he does have a great fastball. I think that you could have put him in that category. I think you could have put him in the slider category. But when you have a guy who posts a 5.8 walk rate and he's, you know, up to 100 miles per hour, he's got multiple pitches, he's very much in the conversation for SP1. We kind of eliminate him for other categories that he makes a lot of sense for. So to your rock field pick, I take Cameron Flueke in the control space.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I think of my like priority players that I had set up here, Rock was my top position player, and Cameron Flueke, for the reasons that you mentioned, was my top pitcher. I just had him in a number of categories. I think I had him in three different categories on the pitching side. I had him top two in, I don't know if I want to say, I don't think it gives anything away. He's already off the board. I had him top two in both fastball and control. Did you go, like, was it a tough debate for you for choosing him in this category specifically, or was it pretty clear and obvious that you wanted him for control instead of maybe fastball? Because I think, and this pick kind of ties into it, but what separates Cameron Flueke's fastball from some other pitchers in his range on the board and just in this class in general is just his feel to land that pitch. Obviously, the control component of it helps with that, but he also has great power. It's got great riding life. It's just got a lot of traits. So I'm curious how much you actually considered him for another category.
I would flip up my board that I have here on my desk, but I don't want to show you who else I have written out over here as kind of my game plan. But Flueke was my first choice initially for fastball. My plan was to go Flueke fastball. And then as I was kind of going over it one last time before we jumped on our show here, I decided that the best move would be to put him in the control category because I don't know, and this, you know, a peek into the logic here, I don't know that there's a pitcher that combines the sheer stuff with control the same way Flueke does. There are a couple different guys, and I won't name them out loud now, but maybe when you make a pick, we can talk about, we'll circle back.
Yeah.
There are a couple guys who I think fit great on the college side into the control category, but I don't know that those players would have brought the caliber of stuff that Flueke brings to the table that he controls so well. So I had him in the control category. I had him first in fastball, and then I had him in consideration. He was not first, though, on slider as well.
Okay, awesome. All right, I'm tempted to get into the pitcher tools as well, just to kind of check you here at the start, because if I let you run away with pitchers, maybe I start to lose some ground. But I also think that like one of my other strategies going into this is like where are the tool categories where I feel like there's some clear separation at the top, and like there are a number where I have multiple guys for my top two or three options that I think I either I don't have the confidence to separate them or I'd be happy with any of them. One category where I'm not sure that's the case is power for college hitters. And I'm sure you can probably guess where I'm going, but I'm going to take Miles Bailey, his power. I think he's probably one of the most extreme offensive profiles in this class, just given the home runs he's able to hit in the amount that he strikes out. So if I can just strip out that elite tool that he has, I mean, his exit velocities are some of the very best in college baseball. If you looked at our plotting power contact and chase rates piece that we did a little bit ago on the site, Miles Bailey is in kind of this area of his own on the top left of the graph where it's just crazy exit velocity data, not a lot of contact. I think if he didn't strike out 31% of the time, you'd probably see a lot more than 19 home runs on his stat card here. When you see him connect with baseballs at the college level, it is truly a majestic thing to see. I mean, 6'4", 250, 260 pounds. Wouldn't shock me if he was even bigger than that. He's a monstrous, monstrous human being. If it was legitimate top of the scale, 80 grade raw power, that wouldn't shock me. It's at least a 70, whatever you're putting on it. And I just think that this sort of power tool, I have a lot of confidence in it being the best of my list. Maybe there's a guy that you have that maybe I didn't consider.
I'm going to challenge you on this one.
Yeah. So I'm curious to hear, but I'm very excited to get Miles Bailey's power here to pair with my Rock Chalowski defender.
So my concern with Miles Bailey, and it is going to be my concern with the power player who I'm now going to take last because I don't have to worry about this. Yep. I don't think you're going to take him for any other category, is whether or not he's going to get to it in games. We had a conversation before the podcast about is this game power versus raw power, and we're leaning towards raw power. And right. Miles Bailey has that arguably more than anybody in this entire draft. Just to give you the numbers, last year, Miles Bailey led all hitters in college baseball with a minimum of 75 batted ball events with a 96.9 average exit velocity, yes. 112 90th percentile EV. This is a monster power hitter. I actually have been in attendance for a Miles Bailey home run, and the only proper reaction is like opening your eyes as wide as you possibly can and being like, whoa, because the ball goes so far and it exits the bat so violently. Again, do I think he's going to get to it enough as a pro prospect? I have major concerns, but as far as the kind of build a player goes,
if I had to pair this with the game power, I would not be making this pick. So to make it clear, I'm taking the raw power and hoping that my hit tool selection can help me tap into that more in games than Miles Bailey is able to. And I'm curious too, if he's just going to improve on that contact this spring, like looking towards like real world on field production. I think he just has some of the widest range of like where scouts are placing him on the board. And it's going to be fascinating to me to see the sort of growth he's able to show if he's able to improve in that area. But some of the contact skills that he just doesn't have, I do think are innate. So I wonder what the sort of contact ceiling is for him and if he'll be able to push closer to it this spring.
The sense that I get in the conversations that I've had about Miles Bailey is that a team will basically have to choose in buying if they want to buy exactly what he is, because there is no mystery in Miles Bailey at this point. He's going to strike out a lot. He's going to be an aggressive player at the plate. He's going to chase a whole bunch. And when he connects, as you and I have said now a couple times, it's going to be majestic. And there's probably nobody who generates, you know, more aggressive contact. Yep. Is that something that teams want? I think that there's a lot of appeal. Like, I don't know why that wouldn't be something that you would want to jump all over if it gets to like the third or the fourth round of the draft. But I also can understand, and based on the conversations that I've had, that there is a tremendous amount of concern about what exactly that looks like from an actual power production standpoint, because it's a totally different game when you get to the pros, and being exploited seems like something that could happen rather easily for somebody like him. I am going to go back to the pitching side for my second pick here, because I think you're kind of leaving the door open for me to do so. I'm going to take Jackson Flora in the slider category.
Okay.
Now, there's some things I want to go over. This offseason is a big one for that pick, because Jackson Flora has elevated the number of slider-ish shapes that he's throwing. They added a slurve to his repertoire. It's not fully a curveball. He also does throw a curve, and it fits kind of somewhere in between his curveball and his already outstanding sweeper. He's got an excellent feel for spin. It sounds like the quality of the strikes that he's throwing are better. And then most importantly, his fastball quality has improved tremendously. They adjusted the grip and they have kind of eliminated a lot of that dead zone characteristic that got him against lefties last year, kind of gave him some problems. Now Jackson Flora has got a better fastball to play everything off of. I think he's one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in this draft. And I think that I could have put him in the fastball category. I could have put him in the changeup category. He made a change to his changeup this offseason, and apparently it looks great. And then the slider, of course, is kind of that feature pitch. His sweeper is outstanding. So pound for pound, I think that Flora was one of the best, almost like a Rock Chalowskian level pick in terms of how much he dominates his category. I feel really good about Jackson Flora on the slider.
Okay, that's a good pick. I, again, had Jackson Flora in multiple categories. I had him in the slider category. I did not have him at the top, and I think the reason why I didn't have him there might be polarizing, and I'll be interested to talk through it when we get to my pick, who, again, he could still come off the board. I'm crossing my fingers that you're not going to take him in another category, but I think that's a really solid pick. I think Jackson Flora's fastball-slider combination right now, just stacking those two pitches and comparing them to other pitchers in the class, probably one of the best that we'll see. I mean, Liam Peterson has a really good fastball slider combination as well. There are a number of other players in the class I think have both. Another player who I think has a really exciting fastball slider combination, I'm going to target that now because I think I really need to get on top of my pitching here and make sure I don't get boxed out entirely. I'm going to go fastball because that's still a category that you need to attack. And I'm going to take Gabe Gackel's fastball. So this is Arkansas right-hander Gabe Gackel. I think that his fastball just has a lot of the unique elite traits that are going to help it play as a plus pitch moving forward. It averaged 95 miles per hour. It's been up to 98, 99. It's got solid riding life. It has elite vertical approach angle. We had it as negative 4.4 in the 2025 season. He throws it from a very below average release height, which I think just helps amplify the shape and movement characteristics of the pitch. The miss rate is not an exceptional miss rate for a heater from last year. Like, we do see some of the best swing and miss fastballs at the college level are getting into that like north of 30% rate that Liam Doyle had a year ago. I would maybe like this pick even more if I could see like the actual production at that level. But I'm hopeful that when I just pair the physical traits with this pitch, with a pitcher who maybe has a little bit better control, once I get around to my control category, that'll maybe make it play up a little bit more. But I think in terms of like velocity and movement, it's difficult for me to find a pitcher that I'm more excited about than Gackle. And so I'm happy to take him off the board here. I mean, he had one of the flatter fastballs in the game of players that I'm considering. If you're filtering for release height, vertical approach angle, and power, it's Gackle, it's Flora right after him, it's Flukie. You've taken Flora and Flukie off the board for me, and I think there are some other names that are maybe interesting, but I did have Gackle's fastball as my number one in this category prior to this, so I'm happy to get him here.
Yeah, I think that's a really good pick, and it goes back to a conversation that we just had with Miles Bailey, which is that you don't have to have confidence in the whole player as a professional prospect as much as you do what he can do in one specific category. And I think, to your point, that Gackle fits really well in just one specific category. You want to broaden it out and talk about the player, I would have concerns about whether or not he's actually a starter. He hasn't yet demonstrated as a college player even that he can hang in a rotation. He last year started as their Friday night guy at Arkansas, then ended up in the bullpen where he was very good. Don't get me wrong. It was like a nearly sub two ERA over about 30 innings of relief to close out the season. He was outstanding and a huge reason why they got back to Omaha. But yeah, from a pure tool standpoint, he's definitely one of my favorites. I think that was a great pick.
Nice. And I'm hopeful he was on your board in fastball and I could box you out, but we'll see. So far, my three picks are for my hitter, Rochlosky fielding, Miles Bailey power. Just got my first pitching tool, Gabe Gackle. You have two pitching tools down, Jackson Flores slider, Cameron Flukie's control, and you're on the clock for your next pick.
I am going to go back to the pitching side because I have an opportunity. Yeah, I think that, so let me preface this with this. I think that my hitters are going to be very sleepery. I think I'm going to target some guys who are maybe some more Jacob Cheeseball type players on the hitting side. I think that the pitching, I'm really going to target some juggernauts here. This may surprise some people. I'm going with Liam Peterson for curveball. He doesn't really throw them in college games. It's like a 2% usage over his career. I think that that is a coaching choice. I think that that has come down to the players do not call the pitches in Gainesville, but in the conversations I've been able to have with scouts, that curveball that Liam Peterson throws is one of his best pitches and maybe something that becomes plus and a seriously high usage weapon when he gets into the pro level. He is a north-south pitcher. I think that's the most important thing that we can say about Liam Peterson. He comes from a super over-the-top slot. It's now more aggressively over-the-top than it was in years past. They worked on that this offseason. The fastball plays really great out of that. And then the problem for him is that his slider does not work north-south. It's an east-west slider, and so it doesn't really agree with the profile. His curveball, however, is a top-down curveball that plays great when he throws it. Last year, his best three starts were his highest usage curveball starts. He does not throw it for strikes terribly often, but it is a really good chase pitch. I think that he gets incredible movement on it. And if he gets with a team that allows him to use it more, that maybe coaches a little bit more out of it, I could see that becoming one of the better curveballs in this class. So it's kind of a sleeper pick in a way with a not sleeper player. But he was actually my number one target for curveball in this draft.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's a fun pick because I had Liam Peterson in multiple categories. I had him for fastball, slider, I believe. But just looking at the curveball, like, it's been a pitch he's thrown up to 86, 87 miles per hour. It's a high spin offering. Like you said, it's got a lot of depth. So I will be curious to see like what the usage is going to be this spring if he's able to throw it with more frequency. But I can't say that I'm not happy that you took him here because I've got my full like curveball selections up for grabs. And now it's just a question of like strategically, which area should I go for? I'm tempted to grab a changeup here because I feel like there's a clear top changeup, but I'm going to avoid that temptation and just try and keep collecting offensive tools because you've yet to target that. My one mm-hmm. hangup is I don't know that there is like a legitimate separation of the top pure hitters in this college class. I think there are a number of players who I think are similarly skilled as hitters. And so I guess I'll just go with the player that I think maybe has the most separation, even if I don't think this tool is quite as important. I'm going to grab my run tool and I'm going to go with the speed of Lucas Moore.
Yeah,
at that Louisville. Sucks. okay, so hopefully that was your top pick in that category. I mean,
by a mile. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a case that he's just the fastest runner in this draft class. Now, there are always track stars who are maybe lesser prospects. One of the players I considered that I don't think is a notable prospect, and I'll throw this one out there for you in case you need a backup, Jacob, but Trent Rice at Oakland was mm-hmm. going to be my like sneaky under the radar pick. I'd just in some prep before this gotten some four flat run times from home to first, and he's stolen a lot of bases. But I think Lucas Moore is just kind of the obvious choice here. He stole 17 bags in 2024 in his first season with Louisville. He upped that to 53 in 2025, was just caught stealing one time. He also stole 48 bags in the Northwoods League over the summer in 2024, played center field with Team USA, moved Drew Burris off that position when they were both playing the same outfield. So I just think, I don't know, how do you break down speed in a way that is interesting to hear about? He's incredibly fast, at least a 70 grade runner. He's going to steal bases. He's going to range around in center field. And so I just think this is another really loud tool. And this one for me was probably the most clear cut separated in any of the categories I had left. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. And that was the one category on the hitting side where I was like, the deeper I go on the pitching side, I'm going to miss out on one really obvious mm-hmm. tools winner. Offensively, and Lucas Moore was that guy for me on my list of players. The way that I would talk about run is I think that there's run just in terms of like you put this guy on a track and he's able to run in a straight line really quickly, and that's important, and Lucas Moore mm-hmm. checks that box. But I also like to think about the utility of speed a little bit and how guys are able to implement it into their game, because I have seen, and I'm sure you know, you could talk about 100 different guys who have fit into this category who run really well but don't really use it in a game. They aren't capable of maximizing their speed. And I think right. that Lucas Moore, better than anybody in college baseball right now, has proven that not only is he very quick, but he's able to deploy it very effectively. They don't catch him almost ever. As you said, only one caught stealing with 50 plus bags last year. So, you know, to me, Lucas Moore kind of fits in this very rare category of supreme burner, where you can put him on the grass or on the bases and he's going to look like the fastest guy, but also mm-hmm. maybe the smartest user of his run tool. And so I think that he was the easy winner in the run yeah. category. I think that's a great pick.
He was one of six players among qualified hitters over the last 2 years among Division I hitters who had 70 or more stolen bases. Now, he was sixth, tied with Kane Kepley at 70 even. Then we have Jordan McLaddy, 89, Trent Rice, 80, Kazuya Jordan, 73, and Owen Prince, 72. A couple of VMI players there, so they really like to run there. But yeah, happy with that pick, and now we'll move on to you for whatever area you want to target.
I got to go hitting now. It's time. As much as I would like to keep attacking and making this monster pitcher, which I feel like I'm well on my way to doing, I'm going to check off the hit category here, and I'm going with Brady Bollinger at Kansas.
I'm happy you've taken a hit, because now I feel just more calm about who I could take. He was on my list. This is a good pick.
Yeah, he I actually think is maybe entering the season as like the most underrated complete prospect, at least offensively, in this draft. Is he a first baseman, and that kind of dampens the value a little bit? Yes. Is it happening in the Big 12, which is not, you know, carrying the same weight as somebody who's going to go and tear it up in the SEC? Also, yes. But I just want to read something from a piece of research here. In 2025, only three Division I hitters with at least 65 batted ball events reached all of the following metrics last season: average exit velocity 89 plus, 90th percentile EV 106 plus, barrel rate above 30%, zone contact rate above 85%, and a contact rate above 80%. Those players were UT Arlington's Tyce Armstrong, who was like a old super senior lower division player who was able to really capitalize on facing some bad pitching. This guy named Rock Chalowski and Brady Ballinger. That is the entire list. And so anytime that you are in this extremely exclusive bucket and 2/3 of it are you and Rock Chalowski and you're doing it against high major pitching, I feel really good about your chances to be a productive hitter. I think that Ballinger is going to prove to be arguably the top player in the Big 12 this year. I think that when the season is over, we're going to look at the stats and say this is a surefire All-American because he's already produced at that level. And I think just based on the conversations that I've been able to have, that teams are starting to get on the same page too. So he feels a little sleeperish to me right now. I don't know that he's making the preseason noise that some of these other top draft guys are making. And to me, when I kind of look through it, I scratch my head a little bit. I think that he is truly one of the best players in this draft, at least offensively speaking, and that somebody's going to get a steal if it continues on this track in like the second or third round. He's a really great player.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, last spring he hit 353, 495, 670, 16 home runs, 21 doubles. In the piece where we're looking at batted ball data for the top college hitters in the class, he was one of 8 players that were above average in every single category for the subset that we were looking at. And one note that I thought was interesting, there were 141 hitters last year who had at least 16 home runs. Of that group, he was one of just 23 who also walked more than he struck out. So you laid out just how well-rounded he is offensively, but I think like the contact skills and the approach and his swing decisions, like that's folded into hit tool for me, and he checks those boxes. So I do think that, like, if you're maybe not aware of Brady Ballinger because he's not quite as famous as some of those other guys, that's going to change pretty quickly. I would imagine on our upcoming draft update, he's a guy who's going to move in the right direction further up the board. It's hard to not look at his overall profile and see him as like a top 50, top 60 player right now. And we'll see how much further he can push himself with another strong spring. So, okay. So at this point, the only two categories we have that neither of us have taken a player, old habits die hard. Jacob, is arm and changeup. And if you know me and if you've listened to me talk on podcasts, you know how little I care about the throwing arm relative to the other tools. Although I do have a shortstop defender, and so I care about it a little bit more than if I had taken Drew Burris or Lucas Moore as my fielder. So for this exercise, I think I'm going to tie an arm that makes sense to my fielder, but I'm going to avoid arm for now. I'm going to go to pitcher. I'm going to pick up a changeup, and I'm going to take the changeup of Trey Beard.
Nice.
I think this one is, there's a group that I think are rock solid and maybe one of the best in the class. This is the one that I was most excited about. It's a mid 70s changeup that he generated nearly a 49 or nearly a 50% miss rate. It was 49% a year ago. It's a high usage pitch. He uses it more than a quarter of the time. Just the consistency, the movement off his fastball, the effectiveness that he's shown. I think conservatively, it's like a top 3, top 4 changeup in the class. And if you wanted to say it's the very best, I think that would be defensible. I mean, it's a tough, it gets tricky with how we're picking these tools because I don't like, do I get the slot that Trey Beard throws this changeup with? I'm not entirely sure. I think the slot that he throws it from is part of the reason that it is effective. And obviously, like, I'm going to have a different fastball here. And I think the fastball changeup connection is really important as well, but it's a great tumbling pitch. It's, I think, at least a plus offering. If you wanted to go higher, you could, but I just feel pretty confident in taking a high usage, high swing and miss changeup from a left-handed pitcher here. So Trey Beard, that's the pick.
I love it. I mean, and you know this because we've had conversations about Beard off the air. I think that he's going to have an explosive year this season. And I really liked what I saw last year when he was at FAU. As you mentioned, he's got the highest release point among college left-handers who return to college this year. It's a pretty modest fastball, but you aren't drafting, you know, the fastball changeup combo. You're just drafting the changeup. And so again, you know, we go back to like the holistic prospect conversation for a second. I think the biggest problem would be that, you know, today you're not drafting guys highly who are 90 to 92 or, you know, even dipping into the 80s rather consistently. Mm-hmm. I have heard that he's taken a step forward velocity wise. What that actually means is kind of to be determined. I think that could very easily be like sitting 92 to 93 now as opposed to 90 to 92? And like, is that going to be enough to change people's minds and shoot him up draft boards? We'll see. But it is an outstanding changeup. He's also got a good curveball. And I already had my curveball category taken care of. But he was on my list for multiple categories. He was first on changeup and he was third in curveball. He's a really well-rounded player. I think that, again, the fastball concern is what it is. But he's going to strike out a lot of guys. I think he's well built for the ACC, and he should be reasonably successful at Florida State. He's a great pick. Go ahead. You want to say something?
No, just going to say, I would be really curious to see how Trey Beard's changeup played off Gabe Gackel's fastball, because that's my current pitcher in the works right now. Go. But we'll go back to you for your pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to power now offensively. And this is somebody who I think fits exactly into the Miles Bailey bucket. And it has especially so proven it this offseason, and that is Carson Tinney over at Texas. He was at Notre Dame last year, and he is a monster when it comes to generating exit velocities. I read off when you picked Bailey what the EVs were like. It was 96.9 average, 112 90th percentile. Carson Tinney is just a couple notches down the list from him, 95.8 average, 111.1. 90th percentile. I have seen videos now several times that have been sent to me of him in a training setting this offseason, hitting like 118s and 119s with a launching pad, trampoline of a metal bat. Again, the question becomes, what is that going to look like in game? What does that look like with Wood? There are real questions about that with him specifically. He's not looked very good on the Cape and has kind of caused some of those questions to arise rather alarmingly, but I'm going to just take the pure raw power here. He is proven to have great strength. He did it at Notre Dame. He's going to do it at Texas. And then we'll just kind of see what happens when he puts Wood in his hands.
Yeah. No, this is a good pick. I had Tinney on my list as well. He was only a couple spots after Bailey. The one player that neither of us took that I was curious if you were going to take, and I might have taken him if you had, for instance, taken Bailey for power, but Caden Bogenpohl would be another player who just has a ton of raw power. And in this exercise, we get to mitigate some of the contact issues that prevent him from getting to it. But yeah, I had Carson. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say on Bogenpohl, I think one thing that's important is that, yes, we're taking raw power. Like, who is just going to go out there and be able to produce batting practice level gaudy power? And that matters. And we have two guys who are really good at that. One thing that I did bake in, which is a little bit more in the game power conversation, is exactly the angles with which guys are getting to their best power. Are they putting the ball in the air when they're maximizing their exit velocities? Bailey, Tinney both do that. They've proven that they can do it. Caden Bogenpohl does not have good angles. And last year, he hit a lot of his best contact on the ground. That scared me. And so, again, are we going for strength? Yes. But did I bake in a little bit into how I wanted to do this? You know, what do they do with their best contact? I did. And so just to lay it out there, my top three in order for power were Bailey, Tinney, Bogenpohl. Bogenpohl being the third, and it was going to be my like emergency pick if I decided I need to go there. If you took Tinney in a non-power category.
It would have felt weird for either Bailey or Tinney, I think, to show up in any non-power category. So I think these are all good like one-tool names to have. I had the same three. I had Bogenpohl and Tinney flipped, and I think most of that was just the 90th percentile. But I think your points about the angles are spot on. And in hindsight, I'd probably flip that order for myself, because I think that's a great point to make. Okay. So looking at this now, the one category neither of us has touched is throwing arm for a hitter. And I think it's time for me to just grab that. The top player who I have currently available, because I had Rochelowski number one for both field and arm. So I got to go to my number two arm here. But I'm just going to take Justin LeBron's arm, Alabama shortstop. I feel like it's a natural pairing with my Rochelowski defense. I think just regardless of the defender I took, Justin LeBron has a plus arm. I think it's a tool that plays effectively on the field. He's shown a really impressive ability to make all the plays necessary as a defender at shortstop. I think he's a tremendous athlete. And I did have some other arms here at other positions. And I just have enough of a hang up wondering, okay, like, yeah, this is a really good arm from third base, but is the actions here, is the length of the arm stroke maybe going to hold me back for my shortstop? If I take an outfield arm, same thing. Do I not get the sort of quick exchange and different like slot variability that I want with my shortstop? And so I'm happy to get just another of the top shortstops in the class. I actually had Rochelowski and Justin LeBron 1-2 in both my field and arm categories. I think you could maybe switch this one up depending on which positions you want to throw into the mix. But sure. I just think this is the most like natural fit for the defender that I've already taken. So Justin LeBron, Alabama, is my pick. And actually, considering how just toolsy and athletic he is across the board, I did have him in, I guess, the running category. He was one of my fallback running options, but I wasn't as excited about taking him there as these two defensive categories.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
Yeah, good pick. Makes sense. I had him both in field and arm. Those were the categories strategically coming into this that I decided I would pick last. I think that there are just a number of different ways that you can go. The thing that also helps is that we're not specifying infield, outfield for field, arm, infield, outfield, doesn't matter. So the pool of players that you can pick from and feel really good about it, I think, is the widest for those two categories. So they sit last on my list to fill out.
Because I bet you were thrilled then when maybe you weren't thrilled I took Chalowski, but you're probably pretty happy I took fielding first then.
Yeah, it worked really well for my strategy to get you to get that out of the way early and then allow me to kind of focus on filling out other areas. And I think that the interesting part of this also is, like, as we've talked about now, we can take guys who fit in multiple ways and kind of block the other person, from putting them in a different category. And so I knew Rock was coming off the board first. That came down to the coin flip about who was going to get him. And it was just a matter of where he was going to get placed. The fact that you put him in field was actually reasonably convenient for me. Like, to not get the best player sucks, but for him to go into that category really worked well for me because it kind of allows me to make up for it in other areas. I'm going to flip back to pitching because I feel pretty good about where I stand overall. And this one is a little more sleeper-ish, kind of. I think that it's top 100 caliber, but Ricky Ojeda at UC Irvine is my pick for fastball. There are a lot of qualities to like here. From extension, he's bumps up against the sevens reasonably frequently on extension. He's got great riding action on that pitch. Just the athleticism that he brings to the table is really nice. It's not necessarily the most overwhelming fastball, from a velocity standpoint, but the way that it plays is well above the velocity band. I think that he's going to have a great year. We're probably going to see him stick in a starter's role. He will open the season as UC Irvine's Friday guy. And just kind of metrically speaking, I like where this fastball stands. And I will say this because your fastball is already done and this player doesn't fit in any category but fastball. The other one that I considered very heavily and just want to, bounce with you back and forth on it for a second here is Bo Rudy over at Tennessee. Just the freakiest fastball that I think I've ever seen. It spins in the upper 2700s, 2800s. It's got crazy vertical life on it. And according to several sources, and this is like on the coaching side and on the scouting side, it was a treat to watch him in the fall against some of Tennessee's best hitters. He apparently absolutely dominated them. What scared me is that we've never seen him do it against power conference competition. And Ojeda, to me, feels like a really sure bet in the fastball category. but it was basically 1A, 1B between Ojeda and Bo Rudy. I didn't have anybody else listed on fastball for me because I was that confident that I was going to get at least one of them.
Yeah, both are tremendous picks, and they're also like picks that if we would have been talking about college fastballs 10 years ago, probably neither of them are brought up because so much of what their fastballs do effectively is not in the velocity right. band. Like you said, both these guys are sitting 90, 93, but they have some of the most exceptional approaches on their fastballs. They're very flat pitches. Rudy, who you mentioned, has great riding. I mean, both these guys have great combinations of flat shaped fastballs from lower release heights with great riding life. And that's kind of what allows them to be so effective. And despite the fact that the fastball I took was on average almost 5 miles per hour harder, the miss rate that Ricky Ojeda got with his fastball last spring was higher than Gabe Gackel's. So if you're going to look at this pick and just look at the velocity, you're missing a lot of like what makes this a really smart pick. And it is one of the more interesting fastballs in the class. I like that one. I did not have Ricky down for this pick. I actually had Ricky down as a potential backup for curveball. And I was curious what you thought about it because like metrically, like how the pitch moves, the power of the pitch in particular, I'm not drawn to, but in terms of its effectiveness, it was one of the best swing and miss curveballs yeah. of any pitcher who's like throwing them with any sort of frequency last spring. So I had that down as a backup. I can't take that now. So yeah, good pick. I'm unsure where I need to go now. I need both my breaking balls. I need control. And well, I need
a hitter. Let's recap real quick. Why don't you go over the team so people can
yeah, so, keep track of where we're at. Jacob's players for his hitter, he's targeted hit and power. He's taken Brady Ballinger for his hit tool, Carson Tinney for his power. For his pitcher, he went Ricky Ojeda fastball, Jackson Flores slider, Liam Peterson curveball, and Cameron Flueke control. Just maybe worth emphasizing here that Jacob got all three of the top college pitchers in the class at various categories, so boxed me out with a number of pitchers who would have done well in multiple categories. For me, on the hitter side, I have Miles Bailey's power, I have Lucas Moore's run tool, I have Rock Chalowski's fielding tool, I have Justin LeBron's arm. My pitcher, I have Gabe Gackel's fastball, and I have Trey Beard's changeup. So because I know you have to target hitting like secondary position player tools, I think I'm just going to take my hitter now. I think this player is probably not going to be a favorite for your field or arm, certainly not arm, but he might be a decent option for your fielding. So I'm just going to take Derek Curiel as my pure hitter. I was torn on whether or not I wanted Curiel or Chris Hakopian. Those are my top two guys in this category. I really don't have a JJ Weatherholt or Travis Bazzana sort of pure hit tool in this class. Other players I thought about, I had Rock Chalowski down, couldn't take him here, obviously. I had Brady Ballinger down, who you took. I had Eric Becker, Lucas Moore down. Like, none of these guys I'm really thrilled about, but with Derek Curiel, what I know I'm getting is a tremendous batting eye. He's very selective at the plate. He's been a tremendous pure hitter dating back to his high school days. I think the hitter that we thought he could be is the hitter he was as a freshman at LSU. He hit 345, 470, 519. There are some things that I'm concerned about a little bit more under the hood, and I'll let you, Jacob, maybe touch on some of these because we talked about this offline. But I think with Curiel, you're getting a quality hit tool and you're getting an elite eye at the plate with a swing that aesthetically and mechanically I like quite a bit. But what's your hang up with Curiel and maybe why you wouldn't have wanted to take him?
I'm like going like this because I don't want the LSU fans to come after me here because I really do think that Derek Curiel is a fun college player and I think he's going to be great for them this year. And if they do go and win a third championship in 4 years, he will be a huge part of that. He's a player of the year candidate because of it. But if you dig into how he fares against off-speed pitching, it is not great. And he is exploited by spin rather consistently. Sliders in zone last year, he hit below 150. His effectiveness in terms of overall contact rate dips below 80% overall. He has a 77 overall contact rate against off-speed pitches. So is he a fastball killer? Absolutely. And one of the better ones, actually. He is a phenomenal fastball hitter. It's like 97% overall contact rate against fastballs. The concern for me is whether or not, here, I actually could pull it. I have it right here. Against fastballs last year, Derek Curiel had a zone contact rate of 96.6% and an overall contact rate of 90.8%. Phenomenal. He is great when it comes to hitting fastballs. You adjust that for breaking balls. Last year, Derek Curiel, contact rate 77.7%. Zone contact rate was still in the 90s because, as you pointed out, he is a good hitter. I'm not trying to say like this is some bad hitter who's getting overrated. He's a great hitter. We have him towards the top of our draft board for a reason. I just don't know that he jumps off the page for the hit tool as much as maybe the surface level stats would indicate, the overall picture would indicate. I think a lot of the damage comes against velocity and spin is going to be an issue. And because we're looking at the pro side of this, I just wonder if pro pitching is going to be able to exploit him a little bit when they slow him down. That would be my question. That's why I felt a lot more confident about Brady Ballinger at my hit pick, because I had the opportunity to go with Curiel, and it was absolutely my number one choice for hitter other than Rock Chulaski, who I knew I wouldn't get, was Brady Ballinger.
Yeah, the secondaries are interesting with Curiel. I think maybe the one biggest area of concern that I would have for Curiel moving forward is just like, how passive is he going to remain being moving forward? I mean, his walk rate is impressive. It's a 16% walk rate. He struck out just 17.3% of the time. But I do think a lot of that is just because he doesn't swing that often. I mean, his swing rate was south of 35% last year. That tracks to his like heart of the zone swing percentage as well. He lets a lot of those pitches go by. Perfectly fine approach for now. I do think that like as he faces better competition moving forward, if he's not able to add a lot more strength and the power maybe backs up when he goes from metal to wood, I will be curious to see like how he's able to adjust, because I'm not sure that he's the sort of hitter that I want to be that passive at the plate. Although I just think in general, he knows which pitches are not strikes and he's going to hold up. Even if he does get a little bit more aggressive, I wouldn't worry about him being like the chase rate skyrocketing. So those are some thoughts on Curiel, but I'm still happy to get him. And I've kind of rounded out my hitter at this point. Just to recap, I have Derek Curiel's hit tool, Miles Bailey's power, which the contrast of those two just from a physicality standpoint is kind of hilarious. Lucas Moura's speed, Rock Chulowski's defense, and Justin LeBron's arm. That is my completed hitter.
I am going to complete my pitcher just to throw one final block at you, although I don't think that I think you have better options in the remaining categories that you have to fill out. Aiden Knock is my changeup. That's the last category that I had to fill out on the pitching side.
He was one of my players for control, and I still haven't gotten that, so that's a good pick.
Okay, there you go. It's a great changeup. I mean, it's got such – it's an excellent separation off of what is, by all accounts, pretty mediocre fastball, but it allows his entire arsenal to play up just because it's so good. He throws it in the mid to low 80s. It's got great tumble. I think that, for me, it's probably the best changeup in this draft. I really like the Trey Beard picks. Like, I don't want to confidently say that it's the best changeup in this draft, but you can make the case.
I had Canuck, too, and I wasn't confident if it was Trey Beard or Canuck. So, yeah, I think these are the two right changeups to take.
I think that they're the only changeups to take. And you could get, like, really abstract with it and say, you know, maybe we put Jackson Flora in the changeup category because of how much, you know, promising feedback there's been throughout the fall, and he made the change to it, and it's a kick change now. All that kind of stuff is great. But in terms of proven changeups, there are really two that just stand out, and it's Beard and Canuck. And so this was an obvious pick for me. The second you took Beard, I was going to go Canuck for changeup. If you had gone Canuck, then I would have tried to get Beard if you didn't take him in another category.
Yep. No, I think this makes sense. Okay, cool. We can recap. So your completed pitcher is Ricky Ojeda's fastball, Jackson Flores' slider, Liam Peterson's curveball, Aiden Canuck's changeup, and Cameron Flueke's control.
It's pretty good job, folks. There.
pretty good job there. Okay, let's see. What do I want to target next? So I need a slider, a curveball, and I need control. Okay, I am going to grab my slider, and the slider that I'm going to take is Joey Volchko's. This pitch in a vacuum is one of the most interesting pitches in the class for me. It is the only slider that has the sort of power that it's a 90 mile per hour slider that's been up to, at least on the data, 95. It wouldn't shock me if some of those pitches in that range were cutters, or his fastball has a lot of cut as well, so there could be some blending there. But no matter what, it is a tremendously hard pitch, 2800 RPM spin. It's this hard, powerful, tight breaking pitch. And I've seen him in short stints where when he's throwing this pitch over the plate, it is almost impossible for college hitters to do anything with it. And so the upside of the pitch is tremendous. His issue has obviously been just, can he throw it for strikes? Can he throw it consistently over the plate? So I just think the purely like the power of the pitch, got a 32% miss rate. I think it could be quite a lot better than that if he's able to throw it for strikes more frequently, or just the overall strike rate, not just the slider, but like forcing hitters to think about it and to face that pitch in pitcher's counts, I think would be beneficial for him. So almost entirely on just the power spin combination, Volchko's slider is the pick for me.
Yeah, the concerns you laid out perfectly. I just think, like, are we going to see the Joey Volchko that throws strikes or anything close to it? Or are we going to see the Joey Volchko that we saw for 2 years at Stanford? Because if it's the Joey Volchko we saw for 2 years at Stanford, there's a lot of work to be done in terms of getting him to a point where he's a productive professional player. I wonder, and you can, you know, push back on this if you want to, but I almost feel as though Joey Volchko is the highest ceiling, lowest floor player among top, let's say, 60 draft prospects in 2026. And obviously there are guys who are, I think he could be as good as SP1 if he goes out there this season at Georgia. And really,
if he does everything, there's no reason that he wouldn't be a top 10 overall pick.
And I don't even think it's that. I actually think if Joey Volchko goes out there and he looks half decent, and it looks like Wes Johnson has figured out a way to demonstrate that progress can be made, then he could be the first pitcher off the board this summer, and it'd be very justified. If we see that there's no progress under Wes Johnson, I actually really don't know who's going to make the progress. And so I would be really concerned if I was a pro team about using one of my first picks on him, because while the upside is fantastic, there is a Grand Canyon sized chasm between what the could be is and what the is. It's not, he has a massive separation between stuff and production. And I would be really concerned about that if we don't see progress. But again, I think that you probably just drafted the highest upside pitcher in this class. It's the best pure stuff when you consider absolutely nothing else. he definitely takes the cake.
And I'm hopeful that the player I take for control will help really tie this all together, because I'm currently watching just a whiff reel of Joey Volchko's sliders. And man, this pitch is tremendous. It's just,
it's fantastic.
Hard gyro biting. Oh, the whiffs he gets are awesome. So yeah, I'm happy to get it.
I also want to just say for, you know, the listeners here, is he did add a sweeper this offseason. And so, Carlos, you've kind of been away because we don't break it out. You did just kind of draft two pitches in one category, like, and it's the same thing I did with Flora.
I'll just take the gyro. I'll throw away the sweeper variant. If I only get the gyro here, that's fine with me. So if you don't want to let me get two, that's okay.
You're getting phenomenal lateral spin is what I would call it. It's kind of the same strategy I use with Jackson Flora, is that there's multiple sliderish shapes that exist in the arsenal, and you're kind of drafting all of them at the same time. Volchko to me fits in that category and is probably right there. 1B. To Flora, he is 1B on my list. He was the second player that I wanted if you had gone pitching first. I now have to finish a hitter. I have run, field, and arm to do. I'm gonna take Drew Burris and put him in the field. I think that he is, if there's one tool that has no real debate when it comes to Drew Burris in the draft community, it's probably what he can do in center. There are questions about the hit tool. There's questions about whether or not the power will translate when you put wood in his hands. And get him against pro pitching. Where I don't think that there is a lot to discuss is just when you put him in center field. He glides out there. He gets to a lot of balls. He covers great range. I'm excited about him. I also had him in my arm category. And so just the overall glove player felt like a great pick for me.
Yeah, no doubt center fielder for me. He really can get after it out there. I did have him on my fielding category as well. He was actually my number two priority position player. I had him in a number of different categories. I had him further down the list in power, just because I think a lot of like his ability to get to his power in game, pulling the ball in the air with a great frequency, is nice for that. I had him in both field and arm as well. I don't know if you touched on the arm there, but he's got a good throwing arm as well. I guess you can't take him for that now, but yeah, I think maybe surprising that it's taken nearly an hour for us to get to Drew Burris in a college best tools draft, because his tools are exceptional. But this is a category that I was like, if you had gotten Rock Chulowski or Justin LeBron and I couldn't get a shortstop, I was lining up Lucas Moore and Drew Burris for fielding in center field. So nice. Okay. I think I'm going to stick with the breaking balls. I'm going to grab a curveball, and I'm going to go with Chase Myers curveball. So this is West Virginia right-handed pitcher, Chase Meyer. One of the highest spin breaking balls in the class. Maybe some debate on whether I'm taking like an in-between slider or curveball. The shape of this pitch and both his slider and curveball are more curveball typical. But with both the breaking balls that I've been taking, power has been a priority as well. So among the curveballs that I'm looking at, among the top players in the class that are super high spin pitches, you've got guys like Chase Meyer, Jason DeCaro, Bryson Moore, Max Knight. Chase Myers, just the velocity of his breaking ball is in a different category than these other guys. It's kind of a unique pitch because of that movement power combination. He generated a 41% miss rate with the pitch last spring. So I just think I'm getting power, I'm getting spin, I'm getting movement, I'm getting depth, I'm getting horizontal break. I like it quite a bit.
I do too. I think that's a really good pick. He was on my list of curveball guys. One player who I completely forgot to bring this up after we talked about Volchko, the slider category, it's a fun game to think about, like, who are the great players that aren't going to have their names called in this because it's only two of us. Cole Carlone in the slider category to me.
I had him there as well. Yep.
Yeah. It would have been a great pick. And I feel like he's just somebody, because ultimately this is the draft podcast, and while he will not be selected because I cannot imagine that you're going to take him for control. He's a great one for slider and has an awesome feel for spin. So that's just somebody who I thought was worth mentioning, but great pick.
Okay. Now you've got, I need to put down Drew Burris. You've got run and arm to tackle here.
I do. And I have gone back and forth. I'm doing run. Let me just start with that. And there are several guys who I think fit really well into this category still. Initially I had penciled in a sleeper because I figured that you were going to take both of the guys who I would have wanted to maybe put in this category.
I'm curious who your second one was. Yeah, because I know Lucas Moore is one. I'm curious who your second run is.
So it was kind of a tie. I had multiple ways to cut this one, depending on what you did. One of them was a major sleeper, and that's Owen Hull, who is now going to play center field at North Carolina. He stole 42 bags last year at George Mason. If there's one surefire tool in his arsenal, it is the ability to run. He looks great on the bases, and from everything that I've heard, in the preseason, he has been very effective in center as well. So I considered Owen Hull, but I did not have
him there. That's a great one. And it does feel like every year North Carolina has a center fielder that fits for this category. So
yes, and it's like the most surefire way to go about it. But I have to go with Jason Walk. And I think that is like the easy number two. Just to let people know where I was debating it, I thought that there was a chance that you were going to put Rock in the hit category, more in run, and take Walk in field before I got to it. So yep. I had Owen Hull as like my, that's how Carlos is going to go about this draft, and I'm not going to get any of these guys. But I did. So Jason Walk is an awesome runner. He looks great in center field. You want to talk about somebody who like glides in center field and looks like they're floating. He may actually be the best in terms of the field category. So I feel like I'm drafting some strength there as well. But a burner on the bases too. So I feel great about Jason Walk. I did not think I was going to get him.
Yeah, a couple of your running options were really great ones that I did not have here on the board, and I feel a little dumb for not even having them on my list. The other runners I had were Trey Broussard at Houston, Trent Rice, Oakland, and Justin LeBron was kind of like my backup, just because I think all these other runners we talked about are a little bit more dynamic than him.
I actually wrote on my draft sheet here, it was like major emergency break glass situation, was any VMI hitter.
yeah, that's a great one.
but I didn't have to go that far. So yeah, Jason Walk it is.
Okay, so I just have control left. I've got two of my top three players on the board. You took the other one, Cameron Flukie, who's been unavailable the entirety of this draft. My heart wants to go with one player, but my head and like the numbers make me want to go for another. So I'm going to go with my heart. You know, I've got a lot of my favorite categories here. I've got a lot of the players who are tops on my list. This player is not the top player on my board, but just like watching him pitch gets me excited, especially when I'm looking at all the like the pure stuff I'm giving him to work with here. But I'm going to go with Ryan Marrone, left-handed pitcher from NC State.
That's my number two.
Okay, that makes me feel good. I mean, no one doubts the pitching ability that this guy has. In two seasons with NC State, he's made 24 starts in 30 games. He has walked 2.7 batters per nine. It was 3.8 his freshman year, which is more surprising than I would have ever expected him to have in college. And then 2.0 per nine as a sophomore. If you look at his overall strike rate across the board, 64%, 68% fastball strike rate. A little surprised the changeup and slider are only at 60%, but I won't get too hung up on just the pure strikes numbers here. I think if he had maybe more overwhelming stuff, he could easily live within the zone more frequently than he does now. I got a chance to watch Marrone when he was just a high school player and kind of a back of the 500 type for us. And just his ability to sequence, his ability to mix and match, change shapes, change speeds with the fastball, breaking ball, changeup has always been appealing. Yeah. The other player that I'm not sure would have been considered for any other category, and was my kind of like, it wasn't really a backup option because I think his numbers hold up well, but Luke Pettit at Dallas Baptist, the son of Andy Pettit, his strike numbers are tremendous. And granted, he's not thrown a ton of innings, and so there could be some small sample noise in here. But if you just sort basically any of the pitchers I would have considered for any of these tool categories, his fastball strike rate from last year is insane. Cameron Flukes is 74%. Luke Pettit's is 76%. And he's basically walked no one across two partial seasons with DBU and a summer. So I think he's actually a sneaky good pick for control as well. But I got to take my guy, Ryan Marrone.
Yeah, that's an awesome pick. And I had Marrone listed second behind Flukie, because, again, it was my plan the entire time to kind of burn Flukie in the control area. Time for the arm category.
Before you get to it, I do respect that you saved arm for last, because this is just the most boring category, I think, in general.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I needed to rush to do this. And I also knew, I didn't know, but I had a very strong feeling that I was going to be able to do this category my way. And the only way I was going to do it, because it is such a boring category, was to throw somebody who has pitched in college into this group.
Lovely.
And I came down to three. I'll lay them all out and you and I can discuss them. Alex Hernandez at Georgia Tech. He's playing second base because it's a loaded roster, but he has a hose. Noah Franco at Texas Christian. Also has thrown, is expected to do it again this year. I'll actually give you four. Tague Davis at Louisville. Mm-hmm. He's playing first base, but again, somebody who has a weapon when it comes to throwing. And then the sneakiest one is teammates with Joey Volchko. Kenny Ishikawa
That's a good one.
From Seattle. Yeah. And my pick is Kenny Ishikawa.
That's a really fun Georgia. Pick to round us out.
He is going to play in the outfield for the Bulldogs this year. He has a chance, if he's going to be as effective as it sounds like he might be, to be their Friday starter. And granted, that is loud because he's in the same rotation as Joey Volchko and Matt Scott. And it comes down to whether or not, you know, it's more of a volatility problem on those guys than it is like mm-hmm. Kenny Ishikawa's claimed Friday night. But right. From what I've heard, he's been incredibly consistent. He's up to 96 from the left side. He's going to be able to have a hose in the outfield because of it. Super good athlete. He's like 5'10". He runs really well. And is just kind of this like spark plug style player who does a lot of good things, you know, just impressively. And so he was the guy who I had circled for the arm category. I was excited to say it. I had a feeling you weren't going to draft him.
No, he was not on my board. And I also like too. So if you had taken an infielder for your fielding tool and not an outfielder, would you still have taken Ishikawa? He's left-handed. I'm not sure if that would have been enough of a hang up for you to not make the pick. But the fact that you got an outfielder, it's irrelevant, even if you didn't want to fold in the handedness factor.
It's irrelevant. I didn't really think about it, to be honest with you, because we kind of threw out handedness for pitching. I felt like it was like tenfold less important when it came to the fielding.
Right.
It does fit conveniently that I have Drew Burris in center field and Kenny Ishikawa's arm to throw on him. I feel like that's a formidable combination of tools. But I was honestly, of all of the picks on my entire lineup here, if I could just like pick the two that I was the most excited about, it was probably Ballinger as my hitter and Ishikawa as my arm, which is crazy
because and you got them
the
both. Arm
was like the last thing that I needed and wanted and didn't really care about the most, but yet I was like waiting to throw Kenny Ishikawa's name into this conversation because, you know, just to go back to something that we've been doing with almost every player in this, I think that there's a lot of value in talking about the holistic draft prospect, and he also fits in the Ballinger category for me as somebody who maybe needs to be on the radar a little bit more aggressively at this point. The feedback has been outstanding, and that's actually as a two-way player. I've heard great things about what he's been able to do with the plate. He's got a good eye. The hit tool is really solid, if not plus. And then the arm is impressive. And so he's going to be able to do that. He's going to be able to go throw strikes on the mound. He's a really good athletic mover. He's somebody who I'm pretty excited about going into 2026.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that rounds us out. Just really quickly to go over both of our players. My hitter, Derek Curiel's hit tool, Miles Bailey's power, Lucas Moore's speed, Rock Chulowski's defense, Justin LeBron's arm, Jacob's hitter is Brady Ballinger's hit tool, Carson Tinney's power, Jason Walk's speed, Drew Burris's defense, and Kenny Ishikawa's arm. My pitcher is Gabe Gackle's fastball, Joey Volchko's slider, Chase Meyer's curveball, Trey Beard's changeup, and Ryan Marone's control. Jacob's pitcher is Ricky Ojeda's fastball, Jackson Flores' slider, Liam Peterson's curveball, Aiden Canuck's changeup, and Cameron Flukie's control. Jacob, any final thoughts? Any other players you want to mention that you had in categories that we didn't discuss? A few of the players that I considered taking. I thought about Vaughn Lackey for defense. Neither of us took a catcher. I thought about my arm. I had more conventional arm tools. Yours were a lot more fun. As my backups, I had Daniel Cuvée and Gavin Grahovic as like third baseman with just big arms. For fastball, I had Thomas Burns as a player that we didn't talk about here from Texas.
He was on my list as well.
Yeah, he was a potential option. Carson Wiggins, Tegan Koons as well. I thought about...
Ryan was on my fastball list too.
Okay, nice. I thought about Cole Stokes and Cole Carlin for slider. Mm-hmm. John Abraham was a curveball option for me. He has some kind of sneaky pitched out of there. And then changeup. I like you said, I kind of assumed Beard and Canuck were going to be our guys. But I also had Wes Mendez, Connor Fennell, and Ryan Marone. And then my last one that I don't know if we mentioned for control, I did have Luke Pettit there, but I also had Ethan Norby at East Carolina. So those are some of the guys who I had on the list that we didn't get to.
I actually had Ethan Norby in three categories. I had him in fastball, slider, and control. So I am pretty high on Norby going into the season. I only had two players listed on changeup like you did. I thought that Beard and Canuck would be the ones. Yep. Curveball. As I said earlier, I was so confident that I was going to get Liam Peterson that was the only person who I listed at curveball. And I went into it thinking, like, I'm going to take him early. I'm going to put him in a weird category, and I'm going to block Carlos from getting it.
I love that.
So, yeah, I didn't really have to think about it. The slider was the one that I had the most guys in. And I'm happy to say that a lot of them were talked about. Carlone was on my list. Flora, who I got. Gackle, who you drafted. Volchko, who you drafted. Flukie, who I drafted. All of those guys were on my slider category, and I think they fit really well. I mentioned England Bryan for fastball. I got Ojeda, who was my top pick. I'm trying to think who else I had. That's pretty much it for that. I listed the arms that I was considering. The field was kind of just however you didn't do it was going to be who I was going to pop in field. Rock Chulowski was on there. Justin LeBron was on there. Lucas Moore, Burris, who I got. Walk, who I got. Those were kind of my fielders.
Did you have Lucas Moore over Drew Burris or no for fielding?
I did not. I had Drew Burris listed as my top fielder, and it was almost entirely because I knew that it was either going to be you or I who put him in the run category, so I didn't even bother building out my fielder group with him because I was going to target run well before I was going to target field, and that's pretty much how it went down until you took Moore, and then I could kind of deprioritize how I wanted to do it. Power was Bailey, Tinney, Bogan Pohl were the top three, and then the hitters, I already went over them. Curiel was on the list, but further down it, Ballinger was on there, Rock was on there. The sneakiest one, and for those of you who pay attention to our content over at baseballamerica.com, Braden Martin over at Maryland was on my list. Probably the weirdest hit profile.
Context savant, yeah.
And he doesn't swing.
You're throwing Carson Tinney's power onto that. That'd be a really compelling offensive
package. It'd be a really compelling offensive package. The problem is that Braden Martin swings 25% of the time. So I would be concerned that we would just never see Carson Tinney's power on this build-a-player. But Braden Martin is super intriguing. And he walked like 59 times last year and struck out like 7 times. So one of the weirder profiles in the draft. And that kind of rounds it out for me.
The one other that I forgot to mention, and maybe the most notable player that did not hear his name called, I had Sawyer Schnosnyder down the list in my power department as well. I think it is interesting that I think he's a really toolsy player all around, but we didn't have him at the top in any of our categories. I'm curious if you had him down for anything, and maybe if there's a player that you're surprised didn't hear their name called at all, because I think most of the names make sense, but he is maybe the most notable player that we did not get involved in this.
The top three
AJ players... Gracia maybe is another player that could have fit for some categories.
Gracia is definitely somebody, but the three that I was the most surprised not to hear were Cole Carlone, which I said after we finish out the slider category, I think he's got a great one. I think that Stroh Snyder was number two for me on run, but then just kind of the way that things shook out, I decided to not do that. I also had him in field and arm. So those were categories that I thought that he fit really well. And then, you know, I decided to get a little bit more creative with my arm category at the last second. So it just eliminated him. And then, Gracia was somebody who I thought about maybe belonged in this. But I think we did a good job of like touching on the players who are going to be the most prominent in their given categories. I don't think that we missed on a lot of guys. One guy for field, who I forgot to bring up that I deeply considered, was Ryder Helfrich at Arkansas. I heard a lot of good things about the way that he runs a game. He's going to call his own pitches this year, which is increasingly rare among college players. It's even becoming something that doesn't happen at the pro level. Shout out to the Marlins. I thought about him for sure as a fielder at catcher.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this year's College Best Tools Draft. Let us know which players you're more excited about in the comments. Let us know if there are any tools that we didn't mention that you think should have been brought up. But Jacob, we've been going here for over an hour, so unless you've got anything to add, we can kind of wrap.
That's it. Pretty excited about my pitcher. I think that my pitcher's a formidable force. We've got like every top guy in the draft, and then my hitting is like a collection of who's who on the sleeper side. So
yeah, your pitcher is like, these are the best pitchers in the class, come at me. Yeah. And your hitter is like, these are my like guys you need to be paying attention to and fun tools. So I like how you attacked it this year. All right, that's gonna wrap it for us. Thanks for hopping on here, Jacob. Hopefully we'll have you more on the draft podcast throughout the year. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Thanks for subscribing to Baseball America, supporting the work we do, allowing us to spend an hour of our time talking about toolsy players in college baseball. So for Jacob, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.